Good evening, it's 5 p.m. on Thursday, March 12th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we visit a portrait exhibit at the Tech Gallery, challenging the stigma around homelessness, sharing the stories of Kingston residents who have experienced housing insecurity and found support through Lionhearts. A Kingston-born photographer shares a national milestone with his work now traveling across the country, and some news out of City Hall this week, including updates from Council's last meeting, a joint statement from the mayors of Kingston and South Frontenac and Safe South Frontenac on the Alto Rail Project, and the start of another University District Safety Initiative period leading up to St. Patrick's Day next week. Without further delay, let's dive in. This week, an exhibit on display at the Tet Center is highlighting the stories of people in Kingston who have faced homelessness and who have found support through Lionhearts. The exhibit, entitled A Sheltered Life, features portraits of 10 individuals who have experienced housing insecurity, with their redemptive stories displayed alongside the work. The project includes work by artists Sherry Dosager, Ben Spadzinski, and Kyla Todd, and also serves as a fundraiser supporting Lionhearts' transitional housing initiatives. At present, 34 persons have been placed into safe, affordable homes through Lionhearts. Still, as of early 2026, more than 570 people in Kingston are experiencing homelessness. Through this exhibit, the artists hope to bring attention to the human stories behind those numbers. I joined artist Kyla Todd at the Tet Gallery this week, and she shared how the project first came together.
Well, it started, I would say, like over a year ago. I was chatting with my friend Al Dosager, and I said to him, I have this idea of drawing, painting portraits and telling stories. And he was like, that's a great idea. And I said, but, you know, I can't do it myself. Like, I don't have a connection with anyone, really. But he did. Like, he works at Lionhearts. And so we decided to work together. And he, because he's sort of like on the ground, you know, like chatting with people. He's somebody that people trust really well. And so he was like, okay, this is a good idea. I'm going to make it happen. It started off slowly. Like, I didn't hear anything for like a few months. And then one day, Al and I, we went and we chatted with some people at the line. It was actually at the shelter that was on Adelaide at the time. And that was, I think, maybe in the summer. And then in September, it was myself, Al, and Sherry, who's the other artist. We all got together and we started chatting. And so from there, it was like Al's job to figure out, okay, who first of all, people have to be willing to tell their stories, right? So whose stories are we going to tell? And then once we started to figure out whose stories we're going to tell, it was like Sherry and I wanted to meet them. So, and the only person that I painted that I didn't get to meet was Andrew, or Andy, but everyone else, like I went down and Ben, our photographer, took a lot of the really awesome, you know, photos, but the ones that I painted from, most of them, except for Andrew, like I took just because I was there meeting with them. We figured out, so I would have figured out who I was painting at least maybe about by December is when my first painting was Justin, so I started painting him, and then basically I spent like the month of January and February, like that's all I did was paint.
Todd says the project was always about more than creating portraits. The artists wanted the work to help people connect with the stories behind each face.
What I wanted, like, and why I wanted it to be art is because, you know, like art is a, it connects you with people, right? You look at an art piece and you feel something in your heart for whatever reason. And even when you're painting, like creating a piece of art is like, it's like a part of you. Do you know what I mean? So the whole purpose of this was to show really that we're all connected. You know what I mean? Like we're all humans. These people are in a situation, but we're connected with them. And the idea was to hopefully make us realize that really this could happen to anyone. Like we're all like a tragedy or two or like a few really bad months away from being in this situation ourselves. And so creating art is like a way of breaking down a barrier, I felt.
Every portrait was created with that connection in mind, placing each person in a setting that reflected part of their personal story.
Well, definitely when we were doing the portraits, we wanted there to be context. Because for one thing, when it's just a painting of, say, a face, and you don't necessarily know the person, you may not feel as connected to just a face. But if you see somebody sitting on bleachers, for example... And you can imagine being there with them. So like doing the portraits in a context was important, to show a bit about who they are and their situations. So Andy's on the bleachers because that's where he lived for a good chunk of time, like under the bleachers. So when they found him and when they were able to talk to him, that's where they talked to him, on the bleachers, because that's where he was living for a good chunk of time. And Kenny, right here, this is the painting with a mop and the bucket. So we painted him in this long hallway because that's the hallway of the shelter. So if you read his story, you'll realize that he has been working at the shelter. But just showing him in this context was important to us. You know, and Phyllis knitting. So for me, like, Phyllis is the one that her story breaks my heart. Well, they all are heartbreaking, but just to know that she's in a safe place right now and knitting, that it's really important.
Since the opening show last weekend, Todd says the exhibit has drawn strong reactions from visitors, many of whom have been deeply moved by the stories being shared.
There's quite a lot of people here, and people were moved by the stories, and we had some people who were crying, you know, because it's really sad, some of the situations. And people were very happy that that we've done this. And I was talking to a woman from City Hall, and she wants to take the whole thing down to City Hall. It's a possibility. And people were just overall very supportive of the project. And I think a lot of people resonated with sort of our intentions. Certain people resonated with certain people's stories, right? Like, so some people would come up to me and say, like, oh my gosh, like, Phyllis's story. And I was like, I know. You know, so people saying that they really loved the stories. They loved how they were written. They loved how, it was Al who wrote the stories, and it just felt like somebody was just speaking. Do you know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel formal. It just felt like a person telling the story in a really meaningful way.
For Todd, the goal of the project is ultimately connection, helping people recognize the humanity they share with those whose lives have taken very different paths.
I hope that they walk away feeling a greater sense of their connection to other humans. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're all in this together, and we are here, I don't know, we're here for each other. Like, this idea that we are separate from each other, like, I want us to be able to understand this, like, shared humanity that we have.
A Sheltered Life will be on display in the Tech Gallery until Friday, March 13th. Kingston-born photographer Brett Hitchens is seeing his work travel across the country, one letter at a time. Canada Post has selected Hitchens Photography for its 2026 annual Flower Series commemorative stamps, featuring cherry blossoms photographed at Vancouver's Natobe Memorial Garden. While Hitchens now lives and works on the West Coast, he grew up on a family farm just outside of Kingston, a connection to the landscape he says continues to shape how he sees and photographs the world. I spoke with Brett about his Kingston roots and what it means to have his work featured on a stamp collection that will circulate nationwide. To start us off, you grew up in the Kingston region. How did that landscape kind of shape your eye as a photographer?
Yeah, definitely. I grew up on a family farm just outside of Kingston, kind of in the West End. And my grandparents' family is from Amherst Island. And I feel like as a kid out in the country, you're just kind of like always out in the in the yard on the farm, exploring kind of like in the forest and the trails and stuff. And I feel like yeah, just as a person, a photographer, especially moving to a big city, it's like you kind of don't realize how special that is, but just be able to go kind of like explore and roam in the landscape. So yeah.
And when you heard your photos were going to be part of the 2026 flower series, what was your first initial reaction?
Yeah, really exciting. The project kind of started 2 years ago. And so it's been like a long process. And so we've known for a little bit that it's come out. And yeah, to kind of finally be released to the public is really special. I think it's an honor that not many photographers ever get the opportunity to have their work focused, kind of to ever get their work featured on a stamp. And so yeah, just it feels really special.
Yeah, and you kind of got into it there, but what does it mean for you to have your work featured on this national series, and to know that it's traveling across the country?
Honestly, like I said, I think it's really special. A lot of friends and family have been reaching out and sharing congratulations, and it's something that'll kind of live forever, which is really nice to kind of be able to look back on in several years from now, hopefully, and just kind of remember, it's kind of accomplishment. But yeah, it's just nice to kind of share it amongst everybody.
Awesome. And your stamp features cherry blossoms. I was wondering what drew you to photographing these blooms in particular.
Yeah, I photograph a lot for the Van Dusen Botanical Gardens. And so that's kind of how I got connected on the collaboration for the assignment. I worked with John Belisle, who is the graphic designer. And we got partnered with the Nairobi Botanical Garden at UBC, which is a Japanese botanical gardens, and they feature a lot of common and rare cherry trees. So yeah, the directive was from Canada Post to capture cherry blossoms, and so that was kind of part of the assignment. But just as a whole, like I love capturing kind of like home and gardens and public landscapes, botanical gardens, and cherry trees are just so kind of fleeting, beautiful, and their blossoms are just like really a unique, exciting thing to capture in photography.
And even though you're based in Vancouver now, do you still see connections between your work and your Kingston roots?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I think I kind of grew up in kind of playing around on like family farm and in the landscape. So as much as I've been out in Vancouver for several years now, I still have strong family connections back in Kingston. I love kind of coming back every year and just exploring area again, and especially going to Amherst Island. I find that landscape over there is just like really inspiring. That like rural agricultural Ontario, but like really quiet, really peaceful. And I think that kind of stillness is something that I reflect back on and kind of bring to my work today.
That was Kingston-born photographer Brett Hitchens, whose images are featured in Canada Post's 2026 annual Flower Series stamps. The new stamps are now available through Canada Post. Before we get into more local news this evening, I'm going to turn to your weather and traffic report featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, March 12th, daytime high of 1 degree, overnight low of minus 7. Friday, March 13th, that's right, Friday the 13th, a scary little bit of snow in the forecast. Not too much accumulation, but you hate to see it all the same. Going to feel closer to minus 4, even though the daytime high is listed at 2. Saturday, March 14th, right around zero for your daytime high, feeling closer to minus 6. Sunday, March 15th, high of 3 degrees, but afternoon snow in the forecast, feeling closer to minus 4. And then starting off next week, Monday, March 16th, daytime high of 3, feeling closer to minus 4, with an overnight low of minus 12. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, overnight street parking restrictions have been eased as of March 1st. This means that overnight street parking is only banned when the weather conditions require it. In terms of road closures for the week, Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is closed indefinitely to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. The other major road closure for this week is Berry Street to Queen, which is closed indefinitely for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. That's it. That's all I have for you this week. This is Jesse Bell signing off and wishing you all safe travels.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. It's a moment many Kingston residents have experienced more than once this winter. The snowplow finally clears your street and leaves a heavy ridge of snow across the end of your driveway. Councillor Ryan Bohm spoke to this issue in a motion he brought forward at Tuesday's City Council meeting.
We know that, you know, that the defeat you feel when you're done shoveling your driveway, especially after the winter we've just had, and that snowplow comes around the corner and you're like, yay, the snowplow. And then he goes by your driveway and leaves these massive chunks that you have no hope of clearing. And you're kind of like, yay, the snowplow.
Windrows created through municipal snowplowing operations are not only a nuisance, but can also present accessibility and service challenges for residents, particularly seniors, persons with disabilities, and households with limited capacity to remove heavy or compacted snow. Several other Ontario municipalities have implemented driveway windrow clearing programs using specialized equipment with a range of service models, eligibility criteria, and funding approaches. Bohm's motion, which received unanimous support from council, will have the city examine the possibility of implementing a similar driveway windrow clearing service in Kingston.
This is more just to explore what's the actual cost of having what other municipalities have, that extra little arm that comes down and essentially just pushes that, right? So it would push it into a bank. The technology exists, other places around us do it, but we don't really understand what it would cost, how it would be implemented, and we're just lacking information. So realistically, this starts that conversation. It's going to give us the information, and then we'll be able to make better informed decisions going forward. I'm kind of in favor of it. I'd love to see this report come back. And realistically, we know that, you know, there's people with disabilities and accessibility issues. We know we have a large senior population. So, I mean, there's a lot of the community that's been asking for this quite some time. And when I started digging into it, realized there was a massive information gap on what the costs would actually be and how we could implement this. So that's basically what we're looking to have that conversation and get some better information on this.
Councillors around the Horseshoe were supportive, citing what they've heard from their constituents on the issue over the years.
I have received a number of complaints from constituents who are predominantly senior citizens and concerns about accessibility. And so having seen this service been provided in other municipalities, I was more than happy to second the motion.
And I've also had some seniors like come in and approach me and contact me about, you know, it's like I've had to pay somebody three times today just to clear my driveway because the plow went by three times. And then, you know, and then it's like that the next day and then the next day. And then it ends up being where it's, you know, it's not an affordable thing to sustain. And I just think that this is really worth exploring because I think this is something that would really, the quality of life for the residents would be drastically improved, especially during the winter months and especially with the winter like we just had, so.
A lot of constituents in my district, they asked during the campaign and after the campaign why we cannot do this when other municipalities doing. And I think it's very important when you wake up 6 o'clock in the morning, you wanna go to work, and you just clean your driveway. And after 10 minutes, you went to get shower, change the clothes, you came back, and then it's like a 2 feet, 3 feet high again, the snow in your driveway. And sometime you early evening or late evening, you clean your driveway. In the morning, you came back and you see the pile up snow again, which is also frozen. And then you have to just do it, and it's take your time, and you are late from work, especially for the senior population in our city. It's very difficult, and I think it is a good idea to look into the information, and if we can implement, and that would be great for the people living in this country. It's a great service to provide them.
City staff will now prepare a report examining clearing service models and their applicability to Kingston. The report, expected by the end of the third quarter of 2026, will include a review of programs in comparable municipalities, along with an assessment of potential service delivery options for Kingston, including associated costs, operational implications, benefits, limitations, funding considerations, and impacts on the city's ability to meet minimum maintenance standards. Following on the heels of a motion discussing snow clearing, Councillor Connie Glenn brought forward another weather-related motion, this time focused on preparing for extreme heat.
So I know it seems a little extreme, we're going from snow to heat, but here we are, Canadian to the core.
Councillor Glenn introduced a motion directing staff to report back to Council on options for a residential air conditioning unit program aimed at supporting vulnerable residents with medical conditions in the city of Kingston. Staff will review best practices from cities such as Toronto and Hamilton, which have run programs providing free portable air conditioners to low-income residents with health-related conditions in the past. They will also consult with Southeast Public Health, which could help determine eligibility and manage funding distribution for residents to receive units. Glenn made the case for the motion, stressing the importance of preparation as summer temperatures continue to rise.
The reason for bringing this forward, I think we've made some significant steps forward in terms of providing cooling. However, we're still faced with individuals who suffer extreme circumstances in the heat. In 2018, a heat wave sent 13 people to the hospital. And this is something that we're likely to see continue if we don't provide help to those who cannot help themselves in this instance. So the motion is directed very specifically for people who cannot afford their own air conditioning units, for people who are challenged with medical conditions. Now what we're basically saying is, let's have staff and let's have public health go away and come back to us with a solid recommendation that would support the people most in need. So also coming out of our climate change adaptation plan, I note that there was mention of the vast increase in the number of days of 30 plus temperatures, and that this is a general upward trajectory. So this is not an issue that is going away. I want to note a couple of other things there too. July of 2024 was the warmest month on record so far. That wasn't that long ago. So we're not seeing a change in this overall pattern, and we know that it's only going to continue to get worse at the rate that we're seeing the change happen.
Heat response has been an ongoing conversation in council chambers. In winter 2025, council approved a motion establishing a maximum indoor temperature of 26 degrees Celsius for residential units equipped with air conditioning during the summer. However, that motion was not extended to units without air conditioning already installed, due to pushback from property owners and concerns about the legality of such a requirement. While landlords in Ontario are required to provide heating, there is currently no similar obligation for cooling.
One of the things I do want to say, because this was brought up, this is not asking landlords to provide this. We understand the challenges with trying to mandate that. We're not about to turn around and do that at this point. This is just saying, for people who cannot do this for themselves, who are suffering from medical health conditions, let's put some sort of a solid program in place and support them, because really at the end of the day, what it's going to lead to is increased disability, increased numbers of people showing up at our ERs, and really this just speaks to the general well-being of our community, which I hope we're all concerned about.
The motion carried unanimously. Staff are expected to return to council with options by the end of April, a quick turnaround aimed at having a program in place for summer 2026. In a message from the City of Kingston this week, Kingston's own mayor and neighboring municipal leaders are calling on the federal government to route the proposed Alto high-speed rail project along the Highway 401 corridor and to include a stop in Kingston. In a joint statement released this week, the mayors of Kingston and South Frontenac, along with the group Save South Frontenac, say those two changes are essential if the multi-billion dollar project moves forward. They argued that aligning the rail line with the existing Highway 401 transportation corridor would reduce impacts on farmland, wetlands, and rural communities. A Kingston station, they say, would connect the region's major healthcare, education, and economic centers to fast rail service between Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. The statement also points to strong local opposition to the current proposed southern route and calls on the federal government to consider public feedback as planning continues. In a second message from the City of Kingston this week, with St. Patrick's Day celebrations approaching, the City of Kingston is reminding residents to celebrate responsibly. The University District Safety Initiative will be in effect starting tomorrow, March 13th through to March 18th, bringing increased bylaw and police presence to the University District. City officials say the initiative aims to prevent large nuisance parties and keep streets clear for emergency vehicles during the busy weekend. Under the city's nuisance party bylaw, hosts of disruptive gatherings could face penalties up to $2,000, while other offenses, including noise violations or refusing to leave a property, may also result in fines. Temporary parking restrictions will also be in place overnight on parts of Division, William, and Earl, with vehicles parked in restricted areas subject to towing. To learn more before celebrations kick off this weekend, you can head to the University District Safety Initiative page on the City of Kingston website. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.